some of them of understanding. Disputes on certain points of religion soon agitated the Christian church, and now having no outward persecution, they began to persecute each other. And many excellent men, men of understanding, fell victims because they would not embrace erroneous doctrines when professed by the state. But this was permitted to try them and to purge and to make them white, to bring all to the pure profession, possession, and practice of Christianity. Now, if this be true, of course, we can just imagine those who did have understanding, as this verse says, as they tried to fight against and to cry against the apostasy and to cry against the falling away of the true order of things, and as they were shouted down and overcome and the actual law of the land superseded the policies and practices of the church, so that they did fall. And this then would bring about a trial and a purging. And those that would stand and withstand through this and who could overcome through this then would be made white, even, he says, to the time of the end. Now, it's difficult for us to know what he means by the time of the end. Does this mean the end of the persecution? Does it mean the end of the Roman power? Does it mean the end of time? We don't know exactly what it means, even to the time of the end. But whatever this period was that he's speaking of here, this is the way that it would be, because it is yet for a time appointed. Once God had appointed a time to be, before something would be fulfilled, it had to be carried out before its fulfillment. Now, verse 36. And the king shall do according to his will, and he shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god, and shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the indignation be accomplished, for that is determined shall be done. Now, the king shall do according to his will. We could possibly apply this to Antiochus, but really we're talking about a time that's after Antiochus Epiphanes. We're talking about a time that's even after the time of Christ, because it's after this abomination of desolation. Mr. Clark says that such a power did spring up in the church that acted in an arbitrary manner against all laws, human and divine, is well known. This power showed itself in the Greek emperors in the east and in the bishops of Rome in the west, and this is to continue. Now, he calls it here the king. The king shall do according. The word king can mean a power. It can mean a movement. It can mean an empire. It can mean a kingdom. And the Roman church was referred to in those terms. It was referred to as Babylon many times. So this verse says the king should do according to his will, and he shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god, and speak marvelous things against the God of gods. Now, I'd like to turn over here to 2 Thessalonians 2 and 4 and read the Apostle Paul's description of this Roman power, this power of the apostate Roman church, and show just exactly how closely what he says fits what Daniel says. Paul says in the third verse of 2 Thessalonians 2, "Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come except there come a falling away first, and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition." Now get this, "who opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he as God sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God." Now what did Daniel say? Daniel said, "And the king shall do according to his will, and he shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god, and shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the indignation be accomplished. So it's a very, very close parallel, the one describing the apostate church and the other describing the very same thing here in Daniel 11 and 36. Now he says that this will be till the indignation be accomplished, for that is determined shall be done. Here again we run into a very difficult passage to explain. Till the indignation be accomplished. Is this the downtrodding of the Jews? Is this the desecration of the temple? Would it be accomplished when the Jews come into the church and the time of the Gentile be fulfilled? Is that the accomplishing of it? Or is it the time in which the true church has been downtrodden by the apostate church, and then the time will be fulfilled whenever that time is finished? Just what does this mean? It's interpreted many, many different ways by the expositors. Some want to call it one time, some another. Some even want to call it till the end of time. But regardless, it simply means that till whatever this indignation is, certainly the church was under a time of indignation. The temple was under a time of indignation. God's people were just completely not even existence as far as the church goes. But he says, till the indignation be accomplished. For that is determined shall be done. It's going to have to go according to the time that's already been set for it. Neither shall he regard the God of his fathers, nor the desire of women, nor regard any God, for he shall magnify himself above all. Now notice the accuracy of the description of this verse here. Neither shall he regard the God of his fathers. That God who sent the evangelists and apostles to preach the pure doctrine, these true fathers of the Christian church and their God, this church has not regarded, but put counsels and traditions and apocryphal writings in their place. Now, certainly the Catholic Church has done this. The Catholic Church says that the traditions of the church are more important than the writings of the Bible, because the traditions of the church supersede what the writings of the Bible are, because they want you to believe that the Pope is continually receiving direct information from God today, that he stands between us and Christ today, that he is Christ's personal representative here on this earth. So when he decides to change the doctrine, he changes it. If you don't eat meat on Friday, but you eat fish in the place of it, he passes the decree. If he decides you can't eat meat on Friday, he passes the decree. If he decides that the Virgin Mary is to be worshipped or that she was caught up miraculously into heaven, he passes the decree. If he changes his mind and said it didn't happen that way, then and those things have come out forth from the Pope, on and on and on. Now he says in this 37th verse, neither shall he regard the God of his fathers nor the desire of women. Both the Greek and Latin church in their anti-Christian enactments have discouraged and in several cases proscribed marriage under the pretense of greater chastity to the discredit of God's ordinance and to Christianity itself. While the Catholics have whole colonies of people that they call nuns, and they won't allow them to get married, and their priests, and their bishops, and their cardinals, and on, these people are not allowed to get married. They claim that they're more chaste, and that they're more holy. And they made laws that the Bible never intended, never allowed for, that was never to be imposed upon the church or anybody. They made these laws, and this fits just with what Daniel says. He says that, nor the desire of women. That is, they do not allow the natural desire, the natural fulfillment of what God intends to happen, they do not allow it to happen, for they then make them abstain from marriage. Now, this doesn't mean that they abstain maybe from sexual activity. There are all kinds of documented accounts where they violate this thing, and where they put the illegitimate children maybe to death by underhanded means, but they do not allow marriage. And then these very same people are the ones who proscribe or who prescribe the laws about marriage, about whether or not this or that or something else could happen in marriage. And they're the great authority on it, yet they themselves are not even married. They're not even able to experience firsthand the conditions of marriage. Now, the next phrase he says, nor regard any God, for he shall magnify himself above all. For the mandates and decrees of that church have been often in defiance of God and His Word. For it has magnified itself above all power and authority in heaven and on earth. It professes to hold the keys and to open and to shut heaven at pleasure, both to states and individuals. For he shall magnify himself above all. And again, that goes hand in hand with what the Apostle Paul says in 2 Thessalonians 2, who opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God, or that is worshipped, so that he as God sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. Then he goes on down into verse 9, even him whose coming is after the working of Satan, with all power and signs and lying wonders, and with all the deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish, because they receive not the love of the truth, that they might be saved. And for this cause God shall send them strong delusion, that they should believe a lie, that they all might be damned who believe not the truth, but who had pleasure in unrighteousness. Now as we study about this apostate church, one thing that we want to bear in mind is this. It is absolutely not the true church. It does not date back to the day of Pentecost. It does not date back to the original founding of the church. It only came into full power in about the 5th century. That's when they had the first pope set in, somewhere around 525 or 30 so A.D. And they cannot date themselves back as the original church because they are not the original church. They are the apostate church. They're what the Apostle Paul says here, that that man of sin and the son of perdition should be revealed and should come in. But now one of the strange things that we want to point out here also is that during the time of the Reformation, when this Catholic Church lost a lot of its power, the denominations that branched off from it and that called themselves Protestants really are an offspring of Catholicism. They date their existence back to Catholicism. They sprang off from Catholicism. Whereas the true church must date its beginning back to the day of Pentecost, back beyond Catholicism. Catholicism came in as something that shouldn't ever have been. It was a falling away. And the true church goes back beyond that by some several centuries to the day of Pentecost. So we as Christians today never regard ourselves as Protestants. We are not Protestants. You know, they like to divide the Christian world into two great classes, the Catholics and the Protestants. But they're all one and the same because one came from the other. And those early men who broke off from the Catholic Church, they didn't say the Pope was absolutely wrong, that he was going to be lost, and that his church was not a non-existent church. They condoned the church. They just condemned some of the practices of it. And so Protestantism and Catholicism have always had this strange alliance, so that even today one wants to say that the other is all right. They had the great ecumenical council. They start trying to break down some of the divisions against them because one won't actually say that the other's wrong. I know of very few so-called Protestant leaders today who would say that the Pope is wrong and that the Pope is a servant of the devil. They wouldn't say that at all. They say, well, he's a servant of Christ, but we just don't see things quite like he does. Now look, he's either right or he's wrong. If he's right, then we better all, let's go follow him. If he's wrong, then we do more than protest. We do not date our existence back to breaking off from Catholicism. We existed as the true church long before Catholicism was ever known, when Catholicism was a mere prophecy, as given in 2 Thessalonians, the second chapter. And so the statement in Revelation in which he calls this harlot, the mother of harlots, means then that not only is she a harlot, but all those who have broken off from her are also harlots. She's the mother of harlots. To be a mother of harlots means that your offspring are also harlots. And so any group that can date its existence back to a time in which they broke off from Catholicism, well, they broke off from something that wasn't even the true church to start with. You've got to date your existence back to the establishment of the church. Now let's look at some more of these things here. Verse 38. But in his estate shall he honor the God of forces. And a God whom his fathers knew not shall he honor with gold and silver and with precious stones and pleasant things. Verse 38, Mr. Clark says, shall he honor the God of forces? The worshiping of saints and angels as guardians and protectors and mediators, leaving out in general the true God and the only mediator, Jesus Christ. Now, honoring the God of forces also to me teaches that they recognize and that they give honor to any power. For example, during the Dark Ages, you know, all of the kings, the King of France, the King of England, the King of Spain, and so on, all of these kings received their power from the Roman church, and as they went out to make war and to conquer and to do violence with force, they were honored by Catholicism. And as we're going to see a little later on, these forces that came in from the north and the south, the Mohammedan Muslim forces, why the Pope is the one who sent out the crusades against them. And they recognized themselves as to how much power they had to do physical, carnal battle. And even today, there's a small army that the Pope has today guarding his palace. So, in his estate shall he honor the God of forces. This also has another meaning to me. Any kind of power, political power, financial power, any kind of power, they honor this force. For example, the Notre Dame University, they pride themselves in having the best football team and the best basketball team and all that. They further their cause by getting some kind of power and force. And they really work hard at that type of thing. And a God whom his fathers knew not shall he honor with gold and silver and with precious stones and pleasant things. The defenders of Moslem, that is, these saints and angel God protectors, were the monks, priests, and bishops, of whom it may be truly said they were increased with honor, ruled over many, and divided the land for gain. They have been honored and reverenced almost to adoration. Their jurisdiction was extended over the purses and consciences of men. They have been enriched with the noblest buildings and largest endowments, and the choicest lands have been appropriated for church lands. These are points of much public notoriety, and they require no proof. Now, this man's writing this 125 years ago, but it's still just as true today as it ever was. He says their jurisdiction was extended over the purses and consciences of men. The very idea that a person could buy his or her way or a member of their family's way out of a state that they call purgatory. You give more money, you're going to be saved. You give less money, you're not going to be saved. All at the discretion of whatever the priest decided to do. So they control the purses of men and the consciences. But he says that they also have been enriched with the noblest buildings and the largest endowments and the choicest lands have been appropriated for church lands. And today we'd be surprised if we knew what all was owned by the Catholic Church. Such things as the Reader's Digest and the Greyhound Bus Company and on and on and on are owned by this Catholic Church. And so they do honor to those things that are not God and honor it with gold and silver and precious stone and pleasant things. I'd like to read for just a minute from Revelation 18, as we think about the gold and silver and precious stones and pleasant things. In Revelation 18, he's talking about this Catholic Church, this Babylon, and the fall and the destruction of it. Verse 7, Revelation 18, verse 7, how much she hath glorified herself and lived deliciously, so much torment and sorrow give her. For she saith in her heart, I sit a queen, and am no widow, and shall see no sorrow. Therefore shall her plagues come in one day, death and mourning and famine, and she shall be utterly burned with fire, for strong is the Lord God who judgeth her. And the kings of the earth who have committed fornication and lived deliciously with her shall bewail her and lament for her when they shall see the smoke of her burning, standing afar off for the fear of her torment, saying, Alas, alas, that great city Babylon, that mighty city, for in 1 hour is thy judgment come. And the merchants of the earth shall weep and mourn over her, for no man buyeth her merchandise any more, the merchandise of gold and silver and precious stone and of pearls and fine linen and purple and silk and scarlet and all fine wood and manner vessels of ivory and all manner vessels of most precious wood and of brass and iron and marble and cinnamon and odors and ointments and frankincense and wine and oil and fine flour and wheat and beasts and sheep and horses and chariots and slaves and souls of men. All of these things, the Catholic Church, this Babylon had control over it, even the souls of men, bartered with, bought and sold, the souls of men. And the fruits that the soul lusted after are departed from me, and all things which were dainty and goodly are departed from thee, and thou shalt find them no more at all. And we could go on and read the next few verses. But what set me off on the description in that chapter was what Daniel says here about the pleasant things. All of the things that seem to be so pleasant and appropriate and so desirable, these are the things that the Catholicism has had its clutches in and has had the ability to control. The arts, which would be the great paintings and painters, the great musicians, the great compositions, many of them have revolved and evolved around Catholicism. The architecture of the great cathedrals, the ability to make stained glass and to make these great structures to stand suspended without very much in the way of visible support, and that have stood for some 8 centuries now, are all evolving around Catholicism. So the good things, and the thing that looks like it's the powerful thing and the way to go, is Catholicism. Most of the movies up to, I don't know what it has been for the last few years, but most of the movies up to a few years ago, if there was any kind of religious theme at all, it was Catholicism. A person could be the lowest down crook there ever was, hadn't even known anything about religion, and if he saw a priest, he'd call him father. Instinctively, they want to give the impression that everybody recognizes them as the church. Verse 39, Thus shall he do in the most strongholds with a strange god, whom he shall acknowledge and increase with glory, and shall cause them to rule over many, and he shall divide the land for gain. Now, talking about dividing the land for gain, this is where Mr. Clark was talking about the monks and the bishops having this all of this land in their possession. I believe we're going to stop at that verse for the next, beginning in the 40th verse, then we get into a different phase of these prophecies. But I would like to emphasize that the book of Daniel, just as clearly as the book of Revelation, points out the very great apostasy here of the church, of God's people, and describes it in terms that nothing else that I know of, nothing else that I'm able to read about, will properly fit. And we see it all around us today in modern times. It's very obvious to us. We know that these practices are contrary to the Bible. And when we look at the offspring of Catholicism, the many denominations of which the church is not a denomination, never intended to be a denomination, we see they too have carried over into their practices some of these same false and abominable doctrines. We'll close there with the 39th verse in, and Lord willing, next time begin with the 40th verse. Anybody have any questions or any comments? Well, if not, we'll begin at that point then next time. tested the wise men of Babylon. Now, of course, these are probably events that God had brought about so that he would have the opportunity to demonstrate himself in the midst of all this idolatry, in the midst of these wise and knowledgeable men of the paganistic ways, to demonstrate himself there through the actions of his own servants. Then the secret was revealed unto Daniel in a night vision. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Now, Daniel didn't the first thing just up and say, oh, look how great I am. I've got the answer. The first thing it seems here, he blessed the God of heaven. He gave thanks for God having revealed this thing to him. Verse 20, Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. Now this is his prayer and his blessing to God. Blessed be. Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. How easily it would have been for Daniel and his friends to have forgotten about God. Here we got ourselves in a bad fix, folks, and we don't look like there's going to be any way out of it. We're just going to have to live by our wits. Now, they turned to God. And then whenever God gave them the answer, they praised God. Blessed be the name of God. May his name live forever and ever.